Welcome to this month's installment of Author Audio, brought to you by Quality Progress Magazine and ASQ, the global voice of quality. My name is Nicole Adrian, and I am the contributing editor for Quality Progress. Today I'm talking to Joe Conklin, a senior member of ASQ, who is a mathematical statistician at the U.S. Department of Energy in Washington, D.C. Joe is a longtime and frequent contributor to Quality Progress, including as author of numerous feature articles and as columnist for the 3.4 per million and Career Corner columns. Today, we're going to be talking about careers and quality. Joe's most recent Career Corner column, Polish Up on Quality Lessons, appears in the June issue. Thank you for joining us today, Joe.
Hi, Nicole. I always enjoy talking about my work, and I hope it helps out QP readers.
Excellent. To get things started, tell me a little bit more about yourself, your background, what you do in your current position, that sort of thing.
I think a creative way to learn about someone is to ask about their favorite TV characters when they were a kid. Three that I remember were Bruce Wayne on Batman, Mr. Spock on Star Trek, and Felix Unger on The Odd Couple. What I liked about Bruce Wayne was his service towards a higher cause. Mr. Spock got me excited about a commitment to logical problem solving, and although Felix and the Odd Couple could be a little hard to deal with, I really admired his attention to detail. You put all those together, and it's a pretty obvious connection to quality. Before entering a quality career, I also looked at being a mathematics professor, joining the Foreign Service, becoming a technical writer, and I even thought about the priesthood for a while. If I had to name one person who got me started in quality, that would be Mason Westcott, one of the founding members of ASQ. I met him when he ran the Applied Statistics and Quality program at Rochester Institute of Technology in upstate New York. By this time, I hadn't succeeded too well in my tries to enter pure mathematics or computer science. But when I started the program at RIT, I found something that was a natural fit and that I could do well. I really admired Dr. Westcott. At the time I entered the program, he was almost four times my age, but he was still a very active professor and quality practitioner. In modern terms, I think that's totally awesome.
I know you've been a columnist for quite some time now. How long have you been writing for the Career Corner column? How did you get involved, and what is your quality career background?
It's a simple story how I got started. About 11 years ago in 2000, Quality Progress announced they were looking for volunteers. I put my name in the hat, and I was part of the original group of six writers that they selected. This October, it'll be 11 years that I've been writing columns for Career Corner. My quality career splits evenly between the private sector and the federal government. In the private sector, I worked mostly in statistical process control and design of experiments. From time to time, I also had responsibilities in the softer side of quality, like auditing, facilitating teams, or project management. Since joining the federal government, I've mostly worked on statistical analysis of government surveys. I really enjoy the public service aspect of my work and feel that I found my niche.
Can you give listeners a summary of your last column, the one in which you talked to the manager of the shoeshine business in your office building? How did that column come about, and how did it become evident that quality is important and relevant in all organizations?
That particular story was an easy pick. I'm always on the lookout for fresh ideas. Sometimes when I write a column, I like to interview somebody whom I think has a helpful message for quality practitioners. In the case of Gabriel, the guy who runs the shoeshine stand, I saw him come into my building with zero companies and over the course of 2 years build up a business in the middle of the worst recession in more than 60 years, I might add, such that although I'm a steady customer, when I go to his place for a shine, there's usually one or two people ahead of me, and I have to come back. Sometimes when I finally make it to his stand and he starts his work, other people will come up and ask about current or possible repair jobs for their shoes. Here's a guy who's stuck to the basics by paying attention to his customers' needs and offering a wide menu of reasonably priced services. He's managing to not only run the stand that he has where I work, but other stands in the Washington, D.C. area, and he's even training apprentices in the local community to set up their own shops. That's the type of success that reflects good adherence to the basics of Quality 101.
What are some of the key takeaways from that column that any and all quality professionals can use or consider in their careers?
I think Gabriel does, there's three things that Gabriel does that I think anybody who wants to succeed on the job and in quality should make a note of. First of all, when he's on the job, Gabriel always has a positive attitude. I find that puts potential customers at ease. A second thing, Gabriel consistently underpromises and overdelivers. So when he gives you a shine or a repair job that's better than what you thought you might get, you leave as an excited customer. The third thing is, when Gabriel is on the job, he's 100% focused and concentrated on that particular job. He doesn't let his mind wander until the job is done, done well, and done right. None of that's rocket science, but it's good advice for any day of the week.
In your January 2010 column, Continuous Learning, you provided information and detailed a do-it-yourself or customizable training opportunity to enhance your career. Can you briefly explain the do-it-yourself training?
The inspiration for that article was a conversation I had with a colleague of mine about some things I could do to increase my chances for promotion. I wanted to avoid doing something radical like going to another agency or getting a whole other degree. After looking at my resume, my friend pointed out that if I took just four more classes, I could qualify for a different occupation series in the federal government. That struck me as a good example of a creative and non-standard approach toward developing yourself professionally. The do-it-yourself part is the concept that you take a look at what's out there and assemble your own personal strategy for training and development in your job. You don't have to limit yourself to the things that are offered in the company course catalog or mimic what someone else does. To give you some specific ideas of what I think this could involve, at my agency, we have something called the Detail Program, where people can volunteer to take a temporary rotation to another part of the agency for a limited period of time, like 60 or 90 days. This lets them see another face of what the larger agency does. The part that they rotate to gets some extra help, and the person who undertakes the rotation, well, they expand their horizons. Some other ideas along this line might be taking a quality-related course, but outside your main specialty. In Washington, we're home to a lot of different professional societies, and obviously not all of them are in quality. One that I plan to attend is the Project Management local chapter. That'll get me outside my box a little bit, I think. Another idea that I found useful is volunteering for service projects, such as through your church or local service organization. I found that doing that helps me develop and sharpen some leadership skills that translate really well back on the job.
Are there any other observations that you can share with listeners today?
I'm thinking of three stories. From each of these stories, I've drawn a lesson that has been very useful to me in my quality career. The first story that comes to my mind is a report I read about the American Customer Satisfaction Index. In this report, I believe it said that the customer approval rating for companies that supply tobacco and alcohol was in the high 80%. The approval rating, on the other hand, for the IRS was about 30 points lower, in the high 50s. I'm pretty sure most people wouldn't want to live in a world where they could drink a lot and smoke a lot, but there were no government services. But the reminder I drew from that story was, whenever people are confronted about writing a check for a big upfront cost, they don't always remember what the long-term benefits are from the investment. The lesson I've drawn for working in quality is, when I'm pushing a proposal for change or improvement, I try to think of as many benefits as possible. I try to think of many different kinds of benefits, both short-term and long-term, and make sure I come back to those in the course of the presentation. I find that it increases the chance of getting a receptive audience for change. A second story that comes to mind is from early in my career. I was working at a job where one of my responsibilities was to report the total defects for different products and processes out on the factory for the preceding 5 business days. The way this worked was the inspectors, when they ran across something wrong, would write up an individual report. Then at the end of their shift, they'd fill out a summary sheet for all the individual things that they had noticed. And then I would take the summary sheets and just add them all up. One of the manufacturing supervisors was concerned about these numbers because she felt that they didn't account for certain things that management should hear about. What she did to try and come up with a better total was just grab copies of the individual reports from the inspectors and had her people add them up. What she didn't understand was that the numbers she was getting and what I was reporting, they both had the exact same source. But surprise, surprise, when her people added up the numbers, all of a sudden it was great data for solving problems. The lesson I took from that was the importance of ownership from the people involved when you're trying to implement a quality solution. As much as possible, when I'm asked to design a solution to a problem, I try to involve the people who will be running that solution as much as possible, not only in the eventual execution, but in the design. Again, I think that tends to increase my chance for success. My last story comes from a year or two ago. In the interest of trying to help out the customers more, the bank where I do business dropped the requirement that you have to stick checks inside envelopes when you want to make a deposit at the ATM. You can just feed the check directly into the slot and the computer can read it. The sign announcing this change was placed directly in front of the ATM machine in letters that were tall enough to read from 10 feet away without my glasses. Immediately after this change went into effect, though, people would walk right up to the ATM. The sign was staring them right in the face, but although they saw it, they didn't notice it. They'd open the box where the envelopes used to be and got mad when they didn't find any. The lesson I took from that was, when communicating a message, there are certain forms and wavelengths that people are used to receiving the message on. Sometimes, in the interest of making things easy for us, we pick a way of communicating the message that's convenient and cheap, but those ways usually aren't very effective. So, when communicating a quality change, I find I need to pay a lot of attention to how people are used to receiving information. When I respect their channels, they tend to do a much better job of getting my message.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for taking the time to talk to us about careers in quality.
This has been fun, Nicole. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Excellent. You can find Joe's Career Corner column, Polish Up on Quality Lessons, in the June 2011 issue of Quality Progress, as well as on our website at www.qualityprogress.com. On the website, you can find Joe's past columns by using the Departments and Columns tab at the top of the page. This is Nicole Adrian, and thanks for listening.